If you are listening to this podcast, it means you are searching. Searching for someone who understands you, someone who gets you. You are yearning to be understood and to belong. Welcome to the Someone Gets Me podcast, where we help smart, talented, and sensitive people navigate an often insensitive world. Let's welcome your host, ambassador, author, speaker, and mentor, Diane Allen. Diane has the experience and knowledge to educate and inspire, as she has been there and understands your unique intensities and their challenges.
Okay, so now let's talk for a minute about the different kinds of overthinking. I don't want to go real deep into all of the very little minute pieces, but I want to bring up a couple points that are important to understand, because after this, we're going to talk about different cognitive distortions and the way our brain changes things to cause the problem. And first, it would be helpful, I think, to make sure that we have some of the same vocabulary and some of the same understandings of the different kinds of overthinking, because not all overthinking is the same. Now, there's an overthinking that I call ruminating, and ruminating means rehashing the past, thinking about it over and over and over. Some people call it the I should have and could have, right? I should have done this, I should have done that, I could have done this, I could have done that, and then go over it and over it and over it and over it and over it, and it doesn't stop. And it's the one subject, the one thing over and over. I should have done this, I should have done this, I should have done this, I should have done that, or I could have. And that's ruminating. That's one kind of overthinking that takes a different strategy to help unlock it. The other kind of overthinking that I want to talk about is one that is called worrying, which is normally catastrophic thinking about the future. I call it praying for something to go wrong. But it's where the person goes into the future often and is thinking all these negative things about what's going to happen. Some people call it dead on the highway syndrome. Some people call it catastrophic thinking, those kinds of things. But where the person is focused on the future, something's going to go wrong, they just know it, and they cannot stop their brain. They keep envisioning the negative things. Like, again, when the hurricane was coming, you know, I had people in my world that were freaking out, knowing everything was going to be gone, they were going to be homeless, nothing was going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And they were going on and on, and they would not release it. It created an overthinking that created a habit, so that when it was time for them to relax and rest and be grateful, it was very difficult for them to settle down. Another kind of overthinking is just the habit of overthinking. It comes from an intellectual overexcitability, where you would be thinking and processing and planning and creating incessantly without giving yourself a break. That happens often when somebody's overly reinforced for their thinking ability. So you get reinforced from employers and families and other people around you to the point where you end up being so driven for the reinforcement that you don't stop overthinking. So that's not as necessarily as much of a difficult one as the ruminating or the worrying as far as causing anxiety and depression and things, but that's the one that causes the fatigue and the burnout and the exhaustion, that core exhaustion that takes a lot of rest to help somebody recover from. So those are the three big, like, kind of overarching kinds of overthinking. But what I want to talk about now, and I kind of want to segue into, are some solutions and some things to think about and ponder and understand. Because some people say, well, you overthink, just stop thinking. Just stop it. Well, if it was that easy, then people wouldn't be plagued with it. And it's not that easy. And there are other factors that are happening, and there's things that need to be considered. And so I want to talk about some of the solutions and some of the practical things that we can do as people to help ourselves not be in this trap of the prison of the exhaustion and the fatigue of being paralyzed by overthinking. That's why we always say analysis paralysis, because if you overdo it, you paralyze yourself, and that's not the goal. So one of the things we do to manage our thoughts, because fear and thinking are the two big cores that cause the problems in overthinking. And so I want to cover the thoughts first. We want to learn how to manage our thinking. The majority of people that I run into do not have disciplined thinking at all. And they don't really even pay attention to what's going through their mind or what it's doing to them. And so they have a lot of cognitive distortions. That means they have belief systems and understandings and things they're saying to themselves that simply are not true. So some people might have thoughts in their mind about something that was unpleasant or painful, or they said something they shouldn't have said, like they disclosed something I shouldn't have said, or something like that, where they have this belief or this idea that what they have experienced or what they've said or done or anything is one way, but it's really not. It's another way. That's a cognitive distortion. We all have them on some levels because our brain will fill in the holes. So if we don't understand what's going on, our brain, because it has to have a picture, a way to put things together, will make it up if it has to. So everybody has some level of it. Now, the more cognitive distortions you have, the more difficult it is to function. So people with severe depression, with bipolar disorder, with mental health issues, typically have a lot of cognitive distortions. People who live only in their head from the neck up, they don't have any integration in their soul or in their emotions, they often have a lot of cognitive distortions. Those things need to be worked on. And some of them can be easily handled and put in their place so that that distortion does not keep triggering the overthinking and keep the problem going. It doesn't let it keep its momentum. So here are some of the cognitive distortions that you might have or you might see in other people. One is all or nothing thinking. It's black or white, A or B, period. That it's all or none at all. And there's nothing in the middle. You know, I'm going to be rich or I'm going to be homeless. There's a lot of room in the middle, right? Or I'm healthy or I'm going to die. You know, I have a cold, so now I'm going to die, right? Or something like that. So it's all or none. And that is a cognitive distortion because the all or none is not reality. Another cognitive distortion that causes overthinking is overgeneralization. It's all or none. Like all women do this. All men do this. All this person does that, you know? Every entrepreneur is a good business person, you know, or whatever they are. This overgeneralizing things is just amazing. And it creates a lot of embarrassment and it really creates a lot of problems. We see it in our culture all the time, where we look at somebody and we profile them, right? Or we overgeneralize a situation and it's just not the case. It's not true. So it's a distortion. It's not like a lie necessarily or made up. It's a distortion of what's there. It's a distortion of the truth. So that happens a lot, that generalization. Like blonde jokes, right? I'm a blonde and people make all these blonde jokes and I'm not a ditzy blonde. And so I don't fit that. And so people say, well, you know, you're a blonde. I'm like, well, you know, not that way. That would be a cognitive distortion. Another distortion that causes overthinking is overly filtering what you're thinking or feeling or the outcomes and ignoring things that are positive and good. Really dwelling on what's negative and filtering for what could go wrong versus paying attention to what could go right. So somebody who's doing a lot of mental filtering is always looking at the problem. So they could say, let's play devil's advocate. And all they will look at in a situation is what's wrong with it and what's going to happen that's not going to work and what bad feelings are going to happen and, you know, all of those things. And they won't pay any attention really much to what could go right. In fact, I could say to somebody who's got this mental filtering distortion and they're talking about what could go wrong and I could go, yeah, but what could go right? And they would almost look at me like confused because it's not part of their cognitive thinking strategy. That causes a lot of overthinking because this poor person is stuck in the prison of always having to be solving problems and most of the problems don't even exist. The next kind of cognitive distortion that causes overthinking is somebody who actively discounts what's good and right and what's positive, where they will see admirable qualities or something good about a situation or a person, and they will actively discount it. Well, yeah, but they do this and that and the other thing. You know, that person's a really, you know, gifted speaker. Yeah, but they wear really tacky shoes and they don't have the right kind of this going on, whatever it is. And that person will always be doing the yeah, but, and then say whatever the negative or not so admirable thing is to undo the good. And that's a distortion. That person is distorting what's going on and creating something that is less desirable. That will create overthinking because the brain then thinks it has to fix something or explain something or understand something, and it gets it going. And then it starts up, and then pretty soon that person is exhausted from overthinking. Another kind of cognitive distortion is somebody who jumps to conclusions. And these people are great because they assume everything. They're assuming that everyone is reacting negatively personally toward them or about them, and they don't really have any real evidence of it. They always think that the event or the situation is going to turn out badly, and they don't have any evidence for this conclusion at all. So they're always jumping ahead. They're jumping to conclusions, and other people around them are going, what? That's not how it is at all, or that's not what's going on. But they've got the negative outcome before anything happens, and nothing is happening. But it's a distortion of what's going on. They may see something or hear something that they think is a certain way, and it isn't really. And instead of checking it, they follow this distortion that then creates the negative assumption. And you know what they say about assuming? It makes an ass out of you and me. And that's what happens when people jump to conclusions. Remember, overthinkers are not very good at staying in the moment. So they think ahead, trying to mitigate problems or figure out what's going on, and they miss what's going on in the moment. And then when they make an assumption, they're typically not correct. Another way somebody jumps to conclusions is mind reading. Like they think they know the answer. I'm sure we all have had people who have tried to finish our sentence. Some of them might be right, but most of the time the person who's trying to finish our sentence isn't exactly right on it. So that person's cognitive distortion is that they know what we're going to say before we say it. That's somebody who jumps to conclusions. The next cognitive distortion is somebody who either greatly magnifies, exaggerates, or minimizes what is going on. They blow the bad things out of proportion. They minimize and reduce the importance of good things often, and they go to these one extreme or the other. You know, like you always do this. That's magnifying something. That's not the case. It can't be always. This person, blows things out of proportion for the negative often. And so it creates the overthinking by having to figure it out or fix it or whatever. The next one is emotional reasoning. This person is the one who believes that the way you feel and reflect on things is true about yourself. So they're always rationalizing and reasoning things, and it's not always the case because our feelings are not always accurate truth. They're not always telling the truth, and they're not always fact. You can feel afraid or say you're afraid, and it could really be another feeling. Or you could say you're depressed, and it could be another feeling. So emotional reasoning can cause a cognitive distortion, which then causes overthinking. It means that you're reflecting on your feelings in an objective manner, and they're not objective. The next one is, we covered this a little bit already, the should statements, chastising yourself and being upset with yourself because you should have done this or you should have said that or whatever. That should statements are a surefire clue that you have a cognitive distortion and that you're about to be, if you're not already, in an overthinking loop. Then we have people who love to label things. This particularly gets under my skin. And these are the people who turn any mistake or shortcoming into a character flaw or an attribute that is not very good. And so this is somebody who says if they make a mistake somehow, instead of saying I messed up, they go, I'm a loser. I'm awful. I'm the worst person ever. I know people who've made mistakes and go, well, I'm the worst father, or I'm the worst husband, I'm the worst boyfriend. And when really all they did is make a mistake, and really what they could have been saying is, sorry about that, or how can I do better? Not, I'm the loser, I'm the worst. And that's a distortion, right? Body dysmorphia is a distortion, you know, seeing yourself as not being what you really are and labeling things in an unhealthy manner, looking for the shortcoming or the mistake. That's a big one. The last cognitive distortion that causes overthinking is blame and personalizing things. And that's one of the things I always teach, help work with my clients. If they haven't read the Four Agreements, I said, Ruiz says it in there, don't personalize anything. And that's hard to do sometimes because it feels personal, but it's not. And so we want to get away from blame and personalizing things and internalizing fault for situations that aren't our responsibility. even blaming other people for things they don't have any control over or things that aren't really real. So it's really about paying attention to what I'm really believing about something, what my cognitive intellectual mind is saying about something, and is it distorted or not? And if you're personalizing it, can you think it's about you? It's a distortion. And if you're blaming somebody else, it's certainly a distortion, because those things are where the brain has twisted things in order to put it in a category that is then not accurate. So all of these things are cognitive distortions. These are examples of them. These cognitive distortions are a way that trigger overthinking. So one of the ways you can use being aware of these to help you not overthink is to say, here I am again, jumping to conclusions. I know better than to jump to conclusions. Let's just stay in the moment. And you take a few deep breaths and say to yourself, stop it, and then breathe and come back to the moment. And so you might be jumping to conclusions of what's going to happen next year. And you might say, it's 2018 and I'm sitting right here in my living room and this is what I'm doing. And anything beyond this is not part of the scenario, to stop the brain from jumping into the future and creating a conclusion that is not appropriate. That will stop the overthinking in its tracks, because you're requiring the brain to come back to the current moment and not be distorted about where it's going or what's going on. That's one example. So there's lots of things we can do with our brain and our thinking and all these distortions to bring them to reality, like should statements. Whenever I hear myself say I should have, which is very rare now. I used to do it a lot. I do it very rarely, if at all, anymore, because I've been working on these things. To release those should statements. If you're one of those people walking around saying, I should have done this, should have done that, should have done this. No, that's not the case at all. You're distorting what's really going on. You're being very mean to yourself for saying, put down that baseball bat. Quit beating yourself up for what you say you should have done or not done. Because the truth is, that's not true. It simply isn't true. So we have to take ourselves down from that position of beating ourselves up and realize that compassion and love and kindness toward ourselves is the way to stop the incessant beating ourselves up that then turns into overthinking, that then exhausts us and causes a healing crisis. Do you see how that goes? It's not working when we do that. So all of these cognitive distortions are really worked with well when you challenge them. To challenge things that are not true, and that these things are representations of things that are just not the case. So the second thing we want to do is identify how you overthink. And there's lots of ways that people overthink the how of it. One of the ways that's real common I see is people who catastrophize things. They're either jumping to conclusions, which is a cognitive distortion, or they're overgeneralizing, another cognitive distortion, and they're making up these really big tall tales of catastrophes that just aren't happening. It's creating a huge mess for them, and it makes them overthink, makes the brain hurt, harms their joints, messes up their mental health, and the whole thing, and 99% of the time, nothing happens as a result of all this crazy catastrophizing. So what we want to start learning how to do is stay in the moment. Notice that? That's the theme so far. Two things. Staying in the moment. Coming back to the second. Right now, right here, right now, this is how I'm feeling. Right here, right now, this is what I'm thinking. And maybe silently saying to yourself something like, this is what it is right now. Like right now, this very second, I'm feeling happy. Right now, I'm feeling scared. Right now, I'm thinking about going to Paris. Doesn't matter what the content is, but to notice the content, speak the content to yourself. Right now, this is what's going on. And really work with the brain to come out of this being into this catastrophizing, negative, overgeneralizing drama. I just call it just one big drama. Those kinds of things keep overthinking going. People who successfully stop this obsession of overthinking are people who can undo some of these habits of, if you've done it once, you've always done it. That's not true either. And under, you know, I always say to myself, where'd you get that? You know, if I'm going to say that something is true, whether it's not is or isn't, I always say, where'd you get it? But, and if it's not something that's in reality, if it's a distortion, I'm not going to be able to answer that question because there is no answer other than I made it up somehow or it's distorted. It's like when you have a tall glass of water and you put a spoon in it, you know, or a knife in it or anything in it, looking at something through water magnifies it versus through air. It's distorted. Same thing in our mind. We get distorted in our mind. It makes us overthink. Then we hurt ourselves by being fatigued and exhausted. That simple. A little trickier to undo, but it's a very simple process when you look at it. Number three is to take note on how you're feeling. Too often we go into autopilot mode, I call it, where we're just going through the day. Like, you know, you've probably driven between work and your house 1,000 times and probably can't tell you sometimes how many red lights you went through or what lane you were in or how you turned, or did you use your turning signal? Exactly. Like you might know what you would typically do, but did you that time? I've driven to and from work sometimes and I can't tell you the route I took because I'm on autopilot. I know I followed the laws, or most likely I did, and I made it in one piece, so that's good. But I was on autopilot. Today, I was driving down a one-way road and another car coming from another street turned the wrong way on the one-way road I was on. They were on autopilot. They weren't even paying attention. I didn't have to know the person. I could tell by the fact they turned the wrong way on a one-way street that they were on autopilot. They weren't paying attention. So we have to develop paying attention with to ourselves and noting how we're feeling. And one of the exercises that I teach people who have a lot of autopilot problems where they're just always out there somewhere, they're not really focused, is to put a rubber band on your wrist. So start with your right or left wrist. And then every time you notice yourself spaced out or on autopilot, you have to snap the rubber band and then change it to the other wrist. And what happens is you start realizing how many times you have to snap the band to bring you back to the moment. Because most of the time, we're thinking about what just happened or what's going to happen or what's happening tomorrow. I serve breakfast to the clients at the facility I work in the morning. And over half of them, as they're receiving their breakfast, ask us what's for lunch. And they haven't even touched their breakfast yet. I always say bread and water or I don't know, because I'm not going to feed into this overthinking and obsession about something that's not in the moment, not paying attention to your feelings. So any method that you can develop that will help you check in with yourself and see, okay, how am I doing now? How am I feeling now? What's going on now? There's all kinds of activities that I do when I have groups of people in person because we can use eye contact and connection in a human form that will help us understand how to stay connected to ourselves. So we want to make sure that we're not judging ourselves and that we're identifying what's really going on. Like, how am I really feeling? Am I tired? Am I sad? Am I agitated? Am I happy? Now, if you have a conflicting emotion, like there's several feelings at one time, the word for that is grief. The definition of the word grief is a conflicting mass of human emotion following any significant change of behavior. So if you're trying to change your behavior, and all of a sudden you have all these feelings, it's because you're grieving the old way. If you make a change and you don't grieve the old way will come back and haunt you. So it's important to use those conflicting emotions as a way to connect to who you are, be into those feelings enough to say, okay, this is what's going on here, coming off that kind of sleepwalking mentality and then dialing into what's really happening. Then you can stop the overthinking because now you know what the cause is and now you know what's going on and you're taking action to be in the solution versus being in this incessant loop of overthinking that gives you the idea that you're solving a problem, but you're really creating a problem. The fourth thing is to challenge your automatic thoughts. And I always say never let a lie go unchallenged. And if you're thinking things automatically, it's probably not true anyway. That means to really pay attention to what is it you're automatically thinking. They're also, in my vocabulary, called commercial thoughts, where people will say something nice like, oh, I'm beautiful, lovable, and capable. And then the next thought, they'll say something like, well, not really. or, well, that's ridiculous, or what's for lunch? All of those kinds of automatic, just random thinking causes trouble. Years ago, like many years ago, actually, when I first started working on my own awareness and my own consciousness development, I remember always saying that I was tired, even when I wasn't. I don't even know where I picked up the habit. I still don't know. But I would be walking down the halls of the hospital I worked in at the time, or I would be in school. I was in undergraduate school when this was happening back then. And I would be in these different places, and I would have energy, and I was young, and I was doing things. And I remember thinking, I'm tired. I'm really tired. And I'm like, but I wasn't tired. But somewhere I had this automatic thought of I'm tired. And whenever I had that automatic thought of I'm tired, and I said it, that sparks overthinking. Well, why are you overtired? You shouldn't be overtired. You're young. You should, you know, da 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 da. And pretty soon, there goes the overdoing it mentally over something that isn't even true. And so a lot of us have automatic thoughts that just happen. Like, you know, I don't sleep well. Or here's another good one. I always learn the hard way. Well, if you say that automatically all the time, guess what you're doing? You're creating learning everything the hard way. That creates overthinking. We want to say, okay, let's look at our automatic thoughts and challenge the ones that aren't true. If you really want to learn everything the hard way, keep saying that. If you want to learn things differently, you might want to change away from automatic thinking that creates the problem. Every time it creates a problem. A healthy person examines what they're thinking, pays attention to what's happening, and then makes their choices based on possible outcome for what they look for. They will look for evidence. They want support of what's going on. They pay attention to their emotions and their thoughts. And the automatic ones are few and far between. Once somebody starts realizing that that's where their health is not in all this remote control thinking or these things that just, you know, you go for 10 or 15 minutes and you can't even say what you were thinking about. Like when I ask somebody what they're thinking about sometimes and they say, nothing, or I don't remember. That's a problem because that creates overthinking that then causes that person to be fatigued and tired and unhappy and unsatisfied. None of those things are good for you. And so one of the things you want to try for this area is to silently say something to yourself like, huh, my thoughts are just cruising through like clouds. They're not necessarily the truth. My thoughts are something like clouds. They're not necessarily the truth. They're just cruising through. Something like that to help you get a step away from the fact that all of these thoughts that are just going do not necessarily hold value or truth. They're just there because they're there. Not everything you think is true and not everything you think is real. Because your brain thinks it doesn't make it so. In fact, for a lot of people, because your brain thinks it makes it not so. So it's very important sometimes to just really get a step away to see what's really going on in your head. And then you can take control of it and know, put in your head what you want in there and pay attention to what output you want. Because if you're not paying attention to your thinking, then it will go in all kinds of directions and really you'll end up paying some consequences you don't want to pay, like stress and anxiety and maybe even thinking things that harm you, you know, that make you upset or angry, and they aren't true. And the last thing in this section about thinking patterns we want to change is replacing our cognitive distortions with what the real facts are. One of the most effective ways to do this is to simply say, well, that's not true. The truth is this. So say in the example a little while ago where you mess up and then you call yourself a loser. And you hear yourself go, oh, I'm such a loser, or oh, I'm such a mess up, or whatever. And you know it's not true, right? You can say, nope, that's not true. The truth is, I am very capable. And so when you challenge it and you go, that's not true, and then you follow it with what the truth is, that helps replace the distortion. And then eventually gets rid of the distortion so that then the overthinking doesn't take it and run with it. So once you recognize the thoughts and you recognize your experience and you recognize that not all of them are true, just because you think it doesn't make it true, and you're able to replace it with what the truth is, now you're in charge. You're the one dictating what you're thinking about and how you're thinking and the direction it's going. And you just took back your own power and your own authority and your own integrity in your own life, because you now are the one that's the thinker of the thoughts on purpose with intention, versus just letting random stuff happen. And then you're just like kind of the puppet. You know, you don't want to be the puppet. You want to be the puppeteer here. So you want to make sure you start recognizing things that are not true. Now, if you have people in your life that are supportive of you or on the growing path with you or trying to help you change this or trying to change their overthinking themselves, you can always talk to them and ask other people, you know, are you aware of the way I ever overthink? Do any of these things resonate with you about me? Or if they ask you about them, and share some of the ideas. Because sometimes we have flavors of some of these distortions and we don't really see it. And that's okay, because the more open and willing you are, then you'll eventually see it. So some of these things that I'm covering may not seem to apply, and they may not apply at all, but understanding all of them puts you in position so that you can not only help yourself, but you can help other people who might seek your guidance. Because our thinking runs our show a lot of the time. And so if we're not managing our thinking properly, then these distorted ways of thinking and these things that we do that are habit can keep creating problems. Because as we overthink too much, we create stiffness and depression and anxiety, and then eventually adrenal fatigue and exhaustion, or our brain gets foggy. None of those consequences are things we want. They all start with realizing that just because we think it's real doesn't make it real. And not everything our brain says is true. And so we have to start being honest with ourselves on deeper levels about what's really the cause here, so we can say, okay, what do I want to do differently? And that might take having a friend or a mentor or somebody, a coach, somebody who's outside of you to be able to reflect back with you and help you come up with a strategy and hold you accountable. But no matter what, realize that all of these distortions that you identify that might be working against you can be changed. You're not stuck, and it's not forever. It can be changed. It just takes work and it takes focus. But you're not stuck, and it's not a hopeless case. And it even doesn't matter if some of these things have been going on as long as you can remember. Because the first step to making a healthy change for yourself is identifying what's really going on. So hopefully this is kind of jogging some of those things for you, so that you can start seeing exactly where you want to look at the challenge here and go forward and free yourself from the prison of overthinking. I trust that you've enjoyed part 3 of our 4-part series on analysis paralysis. For the other parts of this series, please check our podcast list. And for other topics, also available.
Are you tired of searching for someone who understands you? Join our Facebook group, Someone Gets Me. In this group, you will be able to connect with others who are intense, sensitive, smart, talented, and wanting to be understood. Diane shares her insights and teachings, and you can connect with others. Join today.